our Grow Finish platform, I really think, has become the most robust depth platform out there, collecting that data across the entire life cycle of the animal. The reproductive side had lots of focus prior to 20 years ago, but the Grow Finish was very much lots of spreadsheets and lots of access database. But then as we started to grow and connect with packers and feed mills, and it went from retrospective, what happened a week ago, a month ago, to really, how do I actively manage that? So you had to have the entire technology stack from the data and the software to files to now APIs coming together. So I think it's the data ecosystem has grown, and it really is our Grow Finish network. But then on top of that, it's the collaboration platform.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production.
Hi-D from DSM Firmenich can improve your pig's vitamin D status. Hi-D offers pure, proven performance to help your pigs thrive.
AccuFast, the best way to predict the future is to create it. Start creating your future today at AccuFastSwine.com. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way.
Market growth. We're building a bigger appetite for pork. Learn more at porkcheckoff.org.
Well, hello again, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Swine It podcast. Today, we're going to talk data and specifically MetaFarms. Today, I'm joined by Chad Becker, the president, CEO, and chairman of the board of MetaFarms, and Brian Parker, the president of the Ag Platform and chief operating officer. Good day, gents. How are you?
Good morning.
Well, wow, thank you.
Awesome. Well, hey, we're going to start with some introductions here first. So, Chad, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Trey. I'm Chad Becker, president and CEO of MetaFarms. I've been running MetaFarms since 2011. Before that, grew up as a farm kid, milking cows, raising pigs, ended up at Fair Isaac for 18 years, building analytic engines and AI for banking, and now had the opportunity to become an investor in 2006 and really joined in 2011 full-time with the passion of helping bring better data to these farmers. And growing up as a farm kid, seeing the hard decisions these farmers have to make with very little insight and a lot of intuition, how can we use data and analytics and insight to help them make better decisions? And so that's my passion, and that's what we're trying to do at MetaFarms. So thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for being. Brian, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Brian Parker. I joined MetaFarms back in 2015. And I really am charged with my core responsibilities of kind of setting and executing our strategic initiatives, as well as overseeing all the operational aspects of our business. And so very much a hands-on person that likes to get out, meet with our customers, you know, see things, you know, in person, face to face with them, and really help kind of define what that strategy looks like and ultimately what's going to meet their needs for what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Prior to MetaFarms, I have been in software business my entire career. Coming right out of college, I was a software developer. Really found out pretty quickly I liked the business side better, and so I kind of shifted over into that realm. But really, my entire career has been around, you know, developing products that really meet the needs of the customers. And then more importantly, not just on the software side, how do you take what the software is doing to make better informed decisions?
Well, thanks, Brian. Well, yeah, look forward to today's conversation. I'm sure our listeners are too. So part of the reason that we're talking here this morning is MetaFarms has reached a very cool milestone of celebrating their 25th year. So let's first take a look back on what was the original premise of MetaFarms? How did it start, and kind of what was the initial light bulb? Chad, if you kind of want to explain that, you know, how did this all get started to a tool that most pork producers either use or are really familiar with today?
Well, great question. And it really started, you know, 25 years ago, and it's evolved a bit. It was Dr. Tom Stein, as well as the other founders, Gordon Stopher and Tony Christensen, back in 2000, so think.com. So thankfully, everything started on, you know, the web immediately, but it was originally a subscription business that was going to send out technical documents. So dairy.com, Porknet, because there's all, you know, there's nutritionists, there's geneticists, and there are all these technical documents coming out academia and research. And so it was going to deploy them. Google and the internet kind of made a lot of that stuff free. And so the company then really pivoted to production data. And how do we really build out that next level of production data? As we talked a little bit about my intro, right? A lot of that data was scattered amongst spreadsheets on yellow sticky notes in different areas. And so how do we build a platform that's web-based, cloud-based from day one, really looking at all aspects of the production lifecycle for all animals? And so that's really how it's evolved. And I joined in 2006 as an investor saying, well, how do we build that out even more, right? And grow finish really was an area that I think we'll talk a little bit later that I think was really the foundation of what's allowed us to become a trusted and respected company, building out that ecosystem.
Yeah, that's awesome. Brian, what's kind of your perspective on, hey, 25 years, where this has started to where this is now? How do you think MetaFarms has evolved?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And, as I kind of think back to the early days of MetaFarms, right, it was really kind of addressing, fragmented data across the industry when it really does come to data and putting some context around that data. That obviously creates the information to be deployed across production systems, right? So that was kind of how I envisioned the premise of MetaFarms. And I look at kind of the evolution of where it started to where it is now. And it's pretty amazing to see the strides forward, right? It's because you first have to look at it from a standpoint of, well, how do you access the platform, right? And like Chad said, we're fortunate enough to be able to go right to the web right from day one. But then the notion of, well, how do you get that data captured, sooner? How do you deploy mobile applications? And so just the advancement of technology, not just within swine, but just that gives you the capability to deploy it to swine, right? And so as things evolve more, it's like more mobile deployment of those apps, but then also, how do you connect the ecosystem? So you've got all these data sensors out there, the cameras, point solutions. There's so many different areas now that this data is now available. Now, how do you basically connect that to the ecosystem?
Yeah. So Chad, that kind of leads me in my next question is, from 2000 to basically 2025 now, which is crazy to say out loud. What do you think the 2 to 4 biggest innovations that MetaFarm has brought, to the agriculture industry? And basically, how has that helped separate MetaFarms, from others by bringing those innovations to the marketplace?
Well, I think first off, part of the why we survived 25 years is really some early pioneers, some customers that were willing to work with us. And so it really is that collaboration with those early, right? Technology in agriculture is still very rudimentary and growing. And so everyone's at a different point in their journey of technological advancement as they go. And so over the last 10, 15 years, that partnership with some of those early pioneers helped us to define what's important. And in especially in livestock, right? There's a very thin margin. So technology can do a lot of great things, but it has to be simple enough and sustainable enough and at the decision point that to produce, it doesn't interrupt what they're doing elsewise. It has to be additive in that process. And so, our Grow Finish platform, I really think has become the most robust depth platform out there, collecting that data across the entire life cycle of the animal. The reproductive side had lots of focus prior to 20 years ago, but the grow finish was very much lots of spreadsheets and lots of access database. But then as we started to grow and connect with packers and feed mills, and it went from retrospective, what happened a week ago, a month ago, to really, how do I actively manage that? So you had to have the entire technology stack from the data and the software to files to now APIs coming together. So I think it's the data ecosystem has grown, and it really is our Grow Finish network. But then on top of that, it's the collaboration platform. Who are all the interested parties? It's the nutritionist, it's the vet, it's the pharmaceutical company, as well as the production supervisor and the risk manager, really building that ecosystem of data that's trusted and believable. And so part of the innovations are the believable attributes within that data, whether it's feed conversion, whether it's average daily gain, it's livability. Energy was something we put into our platform about a decade ago. And it's just now slowly getting adapted from metabolized energy to digestible energy. There's a whole new level of precision we're starting to get to. And I think the last point, and Brian will probably hit on this too, is really making it mobile enabled. We were one of the first that really started to take mobile technology into the barns against the better judgment of some of our producers at the time, right? They're like, right? Our chore guys are there to do chores. Our supervisors are busy managing people. But the reality is mobile technology has evolved. And I think we're going to see the same thing with sensors and AI in the next few years as that gets more adopted and integrated. But ultimately, can you make it sustainable, believable, and reliable for these producers?
Yeah, thanks, Chad. Brian, anything to add to that? You know, what are some of the key innovations that MetaFarms has brought to the market over the past 25 years that has allowed, you know, our industry to be more successful and MetaFarms to stand out from others?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is kind of making the advancements in the collaboration, right? I mean, when we first started out, there was no kill sheet from the packers. There were no import files from the feed mills. And, you know, I'd say us working again with our producers, we were able to get access to that data, right? And start to standardize that data. So just the first part was just getting access to more and more data. And I'll give all of our producers credit in the world for that, that they were pivotal in making that happen. You know, the next series of advancements, kind of like what Chad talked about, is on the mobile side. You know, we were a little bit skeptical about deploying that because of the biosecurity concerns, the contract growers versus, you know, employees of the production systems. But we saw the need for that. And we knew that one of the goals in doing it was to, one, create data accuracy and also the timeliness of data. And so when we deployed it, we were actually quite surprised at the uptake that we got right out of the gate on it. And now fast forward to today, we look back in our history and said, well, you know, 5 years ago, the average time from when a pig died to the time it was actually recorded was 9 days. Now we look at what it is in our producers using the mobile apps, it's the day of. And so if you think about the timeliness and the accuracy that creates, that's a huge win right there. And then fast forward to kind of today, again, it's that connection of the ecosystem and how do you essentially collect the data in one time and then deploy it to multiple systems, right? And so a perfect example of that is kind of within compliance. And so our compliance solution, you know, connects to the common swine industry audit. And so it's just automatically sent there. So there's an integration there. We've integrated all of our pig movements that naturally are recorded in our platform. And if they want to participate in traceability like AgView, well, really, that's just kind of turning a switch on, and we've got that integration built in. And so it really is now looking at the efficiency of how information is dispersed. And I see that as only kind of the continued evolution with it as certain point systems and point solutions become available. We're going to have to obviously just keep connecting that ecosystem.
Cool. Yeah, Brian, I want to have you build on that answer a little bit. So my next question is going to be, you know, for MetaFarms to have another successful 25 years ahead of us, and for us, you know, to talk about, you know, how MetaFarms has evolved between 2025 and 2050, right? That might be very difficult, but let's just narrow it down to at least the next 5 years, right? What do you think the next 2 to 4 challenges or 2 to 4 then innovations to help meet those challenges are going to be for MetaFarms and maybe kind of the data capture and data analytics aspect of pork production?
Yeah, I think really kind of the next evolution, and if I go back, right, it kind of started out with closed groups. So what was the performance of a closed group? We're in the era right now of active groups. So what are you doing to monitor the day-to-day activities of what's going on? And kind of where I see the next, you know, 2 to 5 years, it's really getting much more into that predictive. And so you start seeing the traits of what's going on. Well, what are the ramifications of that down the road? And that's kind of when you get into the whole AI concept and that strategy. Well, I don't think the industry is there yet. there's no doubt in my mind that that's going to play a role going forward. And so we're going to be kind of at the forefront of looking at that and figuring out how does that apply to producers, because it is a very expensive way to go about it. But I mean, so you got to be kind of cost conscious in that regard. But ultimately, it's going to come. It's going to get cheaper, just as everything else does within technology, right? You get kind of more bang for the buck. And so I kind of see that as kind of the next evolution of it. But as MetaFarms goes as well, is, you know, we're looking at how do we expand. You know, currently we're primarily in North America, and we've got about half the pigs in Australia as well. And so from an expansion standpoint, you know, how do we strategically go into other avenues to kind of spread our platform more globally?
Yeah. And Chad, maybe a more difficult question, right? So as the, you know, president, CEO, and chairman of the board, you mentioned earlier how the livestock industry works off a thin margin, right? And yep. We all ask, I ask all the time for innovation, solutions, et cetera. All that requires investment. So as you look at the challenges that are upcoming and the questions they're being asked for, what's kind of your process or what's your team's process to identify, hey, here are the three things that we're going to work on and provide. And these are 10 things that are really cool. But for us to bring that to the marketplace, it just doesn't make sense from an ROI perspective or a market sales perspective, et cetera. How difficult is that? What's your process? How often do you talk about it? Just kind of help our listeners through that process to help educate them on, hey, here's why MetaFarms is doing A, B, and C, and not D, at least yet.
Well, and you're correct. It is a very difficult process, and you have to be very disciplined because there are requests constantly. And so trying to figure out what's really going to be sustainable. And I'll take the other part of ag, the row crop side, and they've been a little more successful at adopting technology. I would contend their decisions a little easier when you think about a field and they have one turnover and it's a growing season. But the likes of Bushel has done a pretty good job of connecting the ecosystem between cooperatives and growers and now to the fintech side. So they're looking to say, how do we add more value to everyone in that supply chain? And so I think that's where we've got to start looking at is what other technologies and even the livestock supply chain, interestingly enough, is getting more fragmented, right? When 15 years ago, there were lots of farrow to finish. Now the breed to wean is kind of one aspect and the wean to finish is another aspect. So there's supply chain connections that need to happen there. Part of what's made us successful in the last 15 years really is that market engagement, understanding the practical application of how you put it out there. One of the things that Brian has led over the last couple of years and we now participate is we've built a formal customer advisory council and growers, producers, technology. And so they're helping us with our roadmap. We've also built out a whole product team with business analysts to not just take individual customer requests, because that's a hard thing. We have to say no more than we want to. But part of it is, as you build this platform out for the industry, is it sustainable? We just hit 1 billion pigs through our system in the last 20 years. So we're pretty proud of the fact that, right, everything on those pigs, we understand how that pig was grown. And so how do we keep evolving that data? Just yesterday, I was in a nursery barn in southern Minnesota looking at some AI technology in barn with the conversation going, how could we deploy this faster? How could we make it easier for the herdsman, the supervisor, and the back office all to work together? And so it's engaging in those conversations and then really looking for concentration points and saying, okay, that's a great, cool, new, shiny object, and it works in this one instance. Now can it work in 10,000 barns? And there's multiple layers of that conversation. So there's, you know, at the end of the day, there's two big areas I think you'll see us focus on. One, there is global expansion. We've proven our platform can work in multiple operating systems, with Australia being one. But two is how do we connect, especially around animal health and animal welfare, to some of these sensors in barn. And there's both a animal welfare, there's a productivity to that animal piece of it, and then the health. If you really look at, we just did our production index. We do studies, right? We've got enough standardized data to present to the industry. Average daily gain and feed efficiency is getting better out there. Pigs per sow per year keeps getting better. The livability has not gotten better. And it's across the board from the sow to the nursery to the finish. And so really putting energy into all this data we've put together, these sensors and these cameras that are out there, can we start to actually have early interventions and make a difference for these animals? You know, and so the industry will call it AI. I don't really care what the empirical math is behind it, but it's some form of statistical. There's too much data for the human eye to go through it on their own, right? And there's lots of experts because we've got to weigh nutrition and health, and it's really a constrained optimization problem, right? You've got the biological animal, but you put them into the business constraints of facilities and help, and labor is going to be the other piece. So can we make more pigs live, and can we make it easier for the herdsmen to do their job and manage labor? I think those will be the primary areas, and it's probably some form of AI expanding our production gateway, who we connect with. And, you know, investment guys will hate this, but we really have to make 2 + 2 = 3. We can't just keep stacking technology on and say, well, if you spent $10 a sow and $5 a pig, you could have all this great technology. The market can't bear it, because sometimes there's only $2 a pig profit, right, in that process. So technology can't be overbearing. I do think producers, though, will have to think of technology as an asset, as part of an operating expense, and not just a capital expense. So I think that shift will happen too, as it does. You know, at one point in my banking world, one of the biggest banks in the world had a $2 billion IT budget, $1 billion in-house and $1 billion out-house. And it just baffled me. And now I think it's probably 5x that, right? As you think about how digitized the world has become.
Oh, great, great insight. And thanks for walking us through that for sure. Brian, kind of final question before we get to some funner questions, or at least more enlightening for our audience to get to know you two better, is, you know, we talk about AI and the potential data points that are coming in and sensors. You know, how important is data quality and having the correct data? And, you know, we often use the, the same, well, numbers don't lie, but they can be misleading if, you know, not captured correctly, right? So, Brian, talk about kind of the current data where we're all capturing and how important data quality, data integrity is, et cetera. And then also then going forward as we bring in sensors, cameras, and then AI, you know, calculated data into that equation, how important is having the correct data to then start your further analysts with?
Yeah, and I look at it from the standpoint of you can't manage what you don't measure, right? And so I think that's first and foremost, right? But what can be really frustrating is when you're trying to manage and you're working off a data that isn't of quality. So you could be easily making decisions, but what's worse than making a decision based off of bad data? Right? Because then all of a sudden your decisions are off. And that's something that I think every company struggles with. And so the quality of data is paramount, right? And especially if you're thinking about, you know, trying to streamline the entire process from data collection to put it into either empirical models or AI type models, right? It's garbage in, garbage out. And so I think the quality aspect of it is insanely important, but I think that's also where mobile can play a positive role in that, right? Because if you're collecting the data closer to the source, more real time, there's a better chance that that data is going to be clean as opposed to it being a week, 2 weeks old. But as you start connecting that ecosystem, right, these sensors are going to be collecting this stuff automatically. And to me, if it's done right and those hardwares and sensors are accurate, that's only going to make that data cleaner. And that's what's going to help then drive more of those predictive models looking forward into saying, okay, well, what decisions should I be making? And so to me, I think as we're collecting more stuff real time, as sensors are getting better and better, that's just going to give even more opportunity from that data analysis and predictability standpoint.
I would add to that. And so sometimes we technology folks get stuck in right, just software and data, but I'll call it the idiosyncrasies of agriculture, right? We got to put the data in the context of the user. And if you think of the sophistication level of the user, the people that's going to look at that production data, they might be advanced degree scientists that are geneticists, but they also might be a supervisor in barn or in a truck, or it might be a herdsman. And so it's actually putting that data into attributes and context in the right format, whether it's a spreadsheet, whether it's a mobile app, whether it's a research database. And so it really is, and I give a lot of credit to our team. And that's part of what Brian's trying to build is build a team of passionate people that like livestock and like agriculture, right? Because we got some oddities, right? There's some uniquenesses about growing pigs and having hens and turkeys and all that, that if you're not in the ag sector and you're just an analyst or you're an engineering major, you might not get. And so it really is merging best technology people with passionate agricultural people and understanding the context of where that data is going to be used. Not only is it accurate, but is it understandable and is it useful? And I think that's, and we don't have it all figured out, but it's a constant conversation we have to how do we do that and get it in the right spot.
Oh yeah, that's outstanding.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com.
SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Trow Nutrition North America, everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science.
Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers.
Healthy Farms by Bioverse, your manure management experts.
An animal nutrition technology company offering innovative products and new applications for the swine industry. The combination of AB Vista enzymes, technical services, and nutrition expertise provides the industry with new opportunities to further improve production efficiencies. Fiber is receiving renewed interest due to its influence on the microbiome, and AB Vista has brought together research experts to discuss the industry's knowledge of fiber functionality and to introduce a stimbiotic targeted to improve fiber digestion. To request access, contact NAM at abvista.com. That's NAM at abvista.com.
Thank you, gents, very much. So kind of have four final questions to end this podcast on. So Chad, I'm going to start with you first. So Brian, you get the advantage to think about this. So Chad, my first question to you is, what's the biggest hurdle in your career that you overcame that you're the proudest of?
The biggest hurdle, you know, being a small town farm kid, I was a bit of an introvert, and I got my career started at FICO as a team leader, and I had my own little ecosystem that I was in control of, and management challenged me to go into sales. Now leave the nest and go meet with bankers in New York, go to Toronto, go to London. And so suddenly this little farm kid had to spread his wings and go into an uncomfortable spot. And once I got out there and started meeting them and having success, my confidence grew and the ability to connect with them, right? It was, I think, probably the biggest confidence builder I've had to kind of expand that career. And now as I get to bring it back to agriculture, right? Some of these producers are really smart guys, have taken huge risk and have done great. Do we really think we belong with them? And can we bring value? And it's having that confidence to be able to do that. So that's probably the overcoming my own personal fears.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing, Chad. Brian, same question.
Yeah, looking back on it, I would say that, you know, prior to MetaFarms, it was really the first company I had worked for, right? And so, and it was a startup company. So I had the benefit of kind of learning it as the company grew. And I got really comfortable with the industry, and it was pretty, you know, straightforward, black and white. And so for me, I wanted a new challenge. And so my challenge was, do I leave the industry that I know and am familiar with and jump into something that is entirely new to me, right? And that was really from livestock agriculture. And so it took me quite a bit of time to figure out when Chad started recruiting me of saying, you know, is this going to be a right fit? So I went and did a bunch of my research. My in-laws are farmers and talked to a lot of their neighbors who, you know, produce pigs. And to me, it was making that decision of, you know what, let's jump in feet first and learn a whole new industry. And so to me, that was, again, a little bit overcoming my comfort zone to step out into something unfamiliar with it, right? And as I think about what I'm most proud of, and it was also a challenge, is that when I came to MetaFarms, you know, like Chad said, there's the complexities of blending, you know, production know-how with technology folks. and they're very different people, right? And so how do you form that team that collectively is approaching problems to create solutions for? And I'd say one of the most proud things I am is of my team that really has come together. They're very curious now. They want to get into Barnes. You know, they're asking the right questions now, as opposed to, well, just hand me a sheet of what I'm supposed to develop. It's like, no, that doesn't necessarily work in this industry. You got to understand that why. And so really kind of bridging that gap and getting the team all in sync is probably my proudest moment of coming to MetaFarms.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. All right. Next question is, do you have a favorite Thanksgiving tradition?
I don't always get to do it, but usually Thanksgiving morning, while the cooking's going on, I usually like to grab my lab and my shotgun and get a half hour, 45 minute pheasant walk in sometime between 9 and 10 in the morning. Just peaceful. Don't have to think about work. Just walk out through the grass or the brush. And you know, I seldom am successful, but it's pretty relaxing, and it gives it time to reflect and relax.
Yeah. And my tradition is we always spend Thanksgiving at the farm. And so for whatever reason, in the morning, I wake up and I strap my shoes out and I go for a 13-mile run. And I know the route hand in hand. And so it's something that started a long time ago. And for some reason, I just kind of just continue the tradition. And now as I'm getting older, it's getting more and more difficult. Yeah, so we may have to start backing it down to maybe 10 or 5 miles here. But yeah, that's my tradition, that for whatever reason, that's how I start my Thanksgiving day.
Yeah, that's awesome, Brian. That's quite the turkey trot for both of you, actually. So that's awesome. Speaking of Thanksgiving, you know, we often think about turkey, but as a pork producer myself, must ask, do you have a favorite pork recipe and would you be willing to share? Brian, we'll start with you.
I love a good ham at Thanksgiving. I think it's just fantastic. But I'd say that my favorite pork dish is when you make basically a chorizo soup and with pork product in it. That is my favorite. It's got that right amount of spice in it. And my other one is Hy-Vee sells phenomenal jalapeno skinless brats. And
oh, yeah,
those are definitely a family favorite.
Awesome. Chad?
My favorite is my semi-retired wife has multiple part-time jobs, and one of it's at the local butcher shop on Tuesdays. And so they'll cut the meat, and trimming up the ribs, you get the riblet, the inch and a half edge that's kind of throwaway. So it's a cost effective. So I'll buy up 2, 3, 4 of those riblet ends and season them up and put them in a crock pot with a lot of onion and some barbecue sauce, and you let them slow cook for about 7, 8, 9 hours. Just unbelievable cut of meat when you're done with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now I'm ready for lunch. So thanks, gents. Appreciate that. All right, last question. So we kind of talked about this a bit, is AI and its emergence, or, you know, maybe it's stalling out within the agriculture industry. So I'm going to try to challenge you guys. If you could give a 30-second to a minute elevator speech on kind of AI, where it's at, what's its future is, you know, kind of from the MetaFarms lens, what would that speech be? So Chad, I'll start with you. What's kind of your 30-second to minute elevator speech on AI from the MetaFarms perspective?
Yeah, and I have the advantage of spending 18 years at FICO, who was one of the first AI companies doing neural networks for fraud. I think AI is going to come. It does get overhyped. But in essence, AI and advanced analytics is using empirical math to help solve business decisions. So if you think about what we've done for the last 25 years, we've started to build a whole bunch of behavioral data about agriculture. Now you've got sensors and you've got cameras coming. Where AI is ultimately going to be valuable, there'll be point solutions that I think we'll see coming with cameras quicker, a subset of AI. But at the bigger picture, when we can put sensors and cameras and contextual active data together, there should be early interventions. And I think it'll be in animal health. And that's one of my focuses for the next 3 to 5 years, is to get the right data, the right business application, and the right partner. The struggle again in agriculture is there's not a ton of machine learning data scientists that exist out there that know the idiosyncrasies of agriculture. So I think we also are going to have to work together as an industry to solve some of that. And so it'll probably start small, where there'll be research studies and projects that people want. And ultimately, there'll be product in 3 or 5 years that people can buy off the shelf. But I think a lot of the stuff off the shelf is going to be hard to buy because it won't be auditable and understandable or affordable. And so AI's got to check all three of those boxes, in my mind, for the industry to adopt it.
Yeah. Chad, quick follow-up question before we get to Brian. Do you ever see universities start to add agriculture statistics or data analytics within the College of Agriculture minors or even major? Do you think that's forthcoming?
I think they have to. I mean, I've wrote some letters of support to NDSU down that exact path, because the data science for livestock's complicated, because you've got the biology of the animal, and then you've got all the business constraints, and there's multiple, right? There's the facility itself, it's the environment, it's the chore help. And so getting all that, you can do AI on one piece of it, but you could end up with a lot of false positives, and you may not want to intervene on just one piece of it. And so, yes, I think the universities need to do more. Madison's doing some thinking on that, but it's not enough, I don't think. I think that has to be. I think Illinois is doing some work now, but I think that's something that has to get added and should get added.
Sure. Thanks, Chad. All right, Brian, what's your 30-second to minute elevator speech on AI for our listeners?
I think people have to get around the fact that AI isn't going to just be the easy button. I mean, it can be for certain aspects, right? So you go to ChatGPT and say, hey, I want to go out to dinner tonight. I'm looking for this type of restaurant. What would you recommend, right? It gives them that easy button of, hey, here's restaurants ranked from 1 to 10 in your area, right? But I think that works great for certain industries. But I think as you look to apply it to agriculture in general, I don't see it as the easy button, because the reality of it is, a machine doesn't have that expert knowledge that our producers have, right? And so I look at AI as really like an assistant and almost like a co-pilot. It's not going to necessarily, tell you every single answer you're looking for. It's going to be really giving you more insight of the person who's the expertise to make those better decisions. And so I think that's a little bit of the difference of how AI is being applied to certain segments of other industries versus how it's going to be applied in agriculture. I mean, you're never going to be able to get rid of the expertise of these pig producers. I mean, and I don't think you want to. I mean, there's just so much built up knowledge in the past that a machine's not going to replace that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chad and Bryant, for your insights and the discussion. And kudos to MetaFarms for 25 years. We look forward to the next 25 years. I know personally you've helped our business, and you help me on a daily basis do my tasks and jobs. So thank you for all that you do. We really appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you for hosting us.
Yep. Thanks, Trey. And again, thanks to all of our customers and producers that helped us along the way. I mean, it's they're the ones who got us to where we are today. And so we really thank them as well.
Yeah. Thanks, gents. And this concludes this episode of the SwineNet Podcast. Hope you check us out everywhere you listen to podcasts, including YouTube, Spotify, anything like that. And we have this podcast come out every Tuesday, and hope you check out other episodes that we've already produced and will produce coming forward. Hope you all have a great day and happy holidays.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.